Committee of Natural Resource Subcommittee of the Ways and Means to order. And we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5536. And Susie, do you have anything to add?
Yes, I have a couple things. One is a letter from the Oregon Recreation and Park Association. They couldn't be here to testify today, so they have sent in written testimony for you. And then there are a couple other handouts that the agency is going to go over with you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Carrier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Mike Carrier, Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And the first item that I want to talk to you about is this letter that responds to the questions and the requests that you made yesterday. And I won't go over in detail. I will just explain that we have quite a bit of information about how we compile and track customer service satisfaction. And you can see there are four items attached there. One is a summary of complaints received by our reservation center. Another is a summary of complaints that I've received or my office has received. We have an example of the customer comment form that's available to all customers in our parks. And then we have an example of the visitor survey form that we use when we take that survey every 5 years to assess overall customer satisfaction. We've attached a report regarding the non-limited trust and sinking fund accounts, including the current balances in those accounts. And I'll just point out that in many of those, they are restricted use accounts, either gifted to the department by an individual or granted in some other means. The third thing is the report of occupancy, and this was an issue, Mr. Chair, that you were interested in, is the rate of occupancy during the prime season as well as the, what we call the discovery season or the off season for 2002 as a sample to show you what our occupancy rate has been. We have the total number of rentals as well as the rate of occupancy. Fourth, we have attached the selection criteria for each of the major recreational grant programs that we administer, that include the Land and Water Conservation Fund, the local grant program, funded through Measure 6620's Recreational Vehicle Registration Fund, known as the Common Opportunity Grants Program, and the All-Terrain Vehicle Grants, as well as the Recreational Trails Grant. I don't believe that the selection criteria for the Recreational Trails Program is actually attached there. Fifth is the explanation on the proportion of grant funds used for acquisition versus park development or improvement. And I think that was an issue that Representative Morgan was interested in, is just how much is being spent in these grant programs for acquisition, how much for development or reinvestment of facilities. And finally, we have a report of our lands, and this is what I talked to you about yesterday, the lands that we have identified as potentially available for transfer or disposal because of either very poor or no access to those lands or limited development potential or some other restrictions on them from being fully used as a park or recreation area. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about these items.
Question.
Representative Craig.
Just happened to see my Bay Rock.
In the last list?
Yeah. A portion could be considered for agricultural uses. You're talking about the stuff that's out towards the road there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I have to confess that I have not been to McBay Rock and couldn't describe to you what the property is, but it would be...
It's the only access south of the Chetco River Beach until you get clear to the Windchuck that has public access. People go down beachcombing, clamming... flying kites, take their dogs out, walk them. And that was donated to state parks by the McVeigh family.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, in talking with Dave Wright, who compiled this list, what he's explained is that by that reference to consider for agricultural use, he's not thinking of sale or transfer of that land, but possibly leasing that would be suitable for agricultural use. We have a number of properties, especially along the Willamette Greenway, where we actually retain the agricultural uses there and lease those to adjacent landowners for farming.
Uh,
Mike, I wanted to go back to our third page in, the field customer contact report. This is the people in the parks themselves, the types of contacts they have. Is that what this reports?
Mr. Chair, these are the statistics that are compiled based upon that yellow form that's attached to that. These are the reports that our customers at our parks pick up, you know, basically like a customer comment or service comment card, and leave with park staff or send to us at the Salem office. And we get them in both ways. They either leave them at the park or they'll mail them directly to my office. And that's where these statistics are derived, is from those completed forms.
Do you have any... it just comes to mind as I'm sitting here today. Any records of vandalism or people not being responsible that use the park campgrounds or leaving excessive garbage or people that are breaking the law? Crimes that happen in the parks?
Mr. Chair, we keep very detailed statistics on the amount of law enforcement activity. If it's just a verbal warning or something not considered to be a serious encounter, those aren't kept. But if it's something for which a citation may be issued or a written warning or in which there was some conflict, including verbal conflict, associated with it, then the staff file an incident report, and those statistics are kept by our risk manager here in the Salem office and reported to me every year. We also have the means in the statute and in our administrative rules to bar people who have repeatedly or seriously committed some park rule infraction. And my recollection is about two or three times a year we actually bar people from our parks from coming back to them.
You've also had some murders in your parklands the last couple of years, too. And I guess where I'm going with that is that would that be an indication that...
You're welcome.
You're still welcome.
We could use him.
Yeah. That makes me feel so good because I did that same thing the other day. But would indicate maybe there needs to be more enforcement or something in the park. And I would guess you track it. It might not be that there was a complaint, but it did become obvious after investigation that there was a crime in the facility.
Mr. Chair, yes, unfortunately, parks, as all public use areas, sometimes become areas that crimes of that nature are committed. Usually not against park visitors or park staff, although we had a very tragic incident a few years ago where two park rangers were shot, held captive and shot, one fatally. And we think the level of violent acts against park visitors by others is very, very low considering the concentration of people and the things that occur. It's usually most common, as Representative Krieger can imagine, are domestic disputes within the campgrounds where police are called and a family fight is broken up and somebody is transported to jail. But with regard to the incident a few years ago and some of the concerns, that's exactly why we've established the Visitor Service Academy that I was describing to you, an informal conversation, is to ensure that our staff are properly trained to deal with all kinds of encounters with the public, to ensure visitor safety, first of all, and then secondly, to ensure compliance with park rules. And our approach has been to put less emphasis on the law enforcement, traditional law enforcement approach, and more on the cooperation, compliance, and improved communication as a tool for managing people in parks.
Representative Krieger, any more questions?
Mr. Chair, well, no, other than the fact that down where we are, we've got all these parks that are strung out along the coast, and you've got a city town at either end, and sometimes not even that if you get up to Cape Blanco, and you only have people there a certain part of the year. You don't have a camp hosts there a whole year. Some of them are day use areas that are, they drive down to them. And with less state police in those areas and sheriffs, there's a limited amount of actual coverage. That's something we're going to have to put up with. That has been a concern.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I'd like to respond to that because I think we have the opportunity to help, at least with regard to those recreation areas. There's two of the things that we do that I think work well for us with regard to uniformed law enforcement and empowered law enforcement presence in the parks is we work with state police through their cadet program and actually assign state police cadets for a season in our state parks, in our more heavily used state parks, which is a great experience for them, but it's also just incredibly valuable for us to have that uniform presence in the most heavily used parks. The second thing we do is we have a number of retired troopers, state police troopers, who we reemploy on a seasonal basis to perform campground security and park safety. And I suspect there will be quite a few more of those available.
That's an opportunity for me. Never thought of that.
Mike, I hope you don't pay more than $12.50 a month, or we just lost a representative.
I'll go back to work.
I had a thought. Oh, do you? I know the Forest Service, I believe, maybe BLM, have their own law enforcement officers as well. Do you foresee the parks deputizing or doing anything with your staff?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't foresee that, and hope that we can continue through how we train our staff, and they have very limited commission powers to write citations based upon state park laws and rules. But as far as creating a core or a cadre of uniformed police officers in our state park system, I've had quite a bit of experience with that and would recommend against it because the nature of the work that we do, the area that we cover, and the diversity of work to which we assign our staff really requires that the vast majority of our staff be ready to do any kind of job at any time. And in Iowa, as an example, my park rangers were fully empowered police officers of the state, carried weapons, went to the law enforcement academy. And it was very difficult, especially after their academy training, to really reorient them to the full range of duties which they needed to perform, which included park maintenance and other. And it was very hard for them to step out of that role as a officer to a role of being someone who cleans the restroom.
I was just going to say that.
It was just very difficult for them to do that. And the level of law enforcement activity within state parks is such that someone who's trained to use a weapon, for example, or another defensive tactics, and isn't regularly confronted with those kinds of situations, ends up over the long run being more at risk because the expectation on them when they get into a situation like with the two rangers we had a few years ago is that they respond with full continuum force, including deadly force, and mentally, psychologically, and experience-wise, they just aren't as prepared as a full-time officer working in a larger area and with a greater diversity of customers. So my recommendation, and plus there are just some incredible training, arming, equipping, as well as other types of expenses associated with having a cadre of officers as compared to the kind of staff we employ.
I would think it would totally change the atmosphere of the parks, too.
Mr. Chair, I can assure you that it certainly has in those states that have fully empowered peace officers. It changes the atmosphere of the park and not always in the way that you desire.
Any other questions, Representative? Is that all you have, Mike?
I have one other item, and I'm going to ask Mr. Chair for your indulgence on this because I should have brought this up earlier in the week. But one of the complexities of managing a large agency with a large workforce and a highly variable workload is that staffing needs arise that clearly fall aside the biennial cycle of preparing a budget request, seeking commission approval, working through DAS, and then including a budget request. And in the last couple of months, there have been two workload issues that have surfaced after we prepared our budget request and after the governor's recommended budget was presented to the legislature that I felt compelled to do something about. And they both relate to the State Historic Preservation Office. And one is with regard to the workload on the archaeology side of what the SHPO office does. As we mentioned earlier in our presentations, we're putting together a GIS-based database in cooperation with the Bureau of Land Management, Forest Service, and other agencies to digitize and collect all the information on archaeological resources, which will result in much greater efficiency and speed at which to that information can be retrieved, and we can answer questions about impacts, potential impacts on cultural resources. That's created a short-term heavy workload that has to be balanced with the regular duties of the state archaeologist under the Section 106, the Federal Act Nexus Review, and the state laws, which for Oregon are fairly progressive state laws and involve a permit system that requires a permit issued by our department before any archaeological exploration can occur. So we had made a request to DAS several weeks ago to establish a limited duration position to assist our archaeologist, our state archaeologist, in that work. And we have submitted that to DAS and haven't received, along with a financing plan, and we do have sufficient financing to handle that, but we haven't received final approval from DAS. Secondly, the whole issue of workload within the SHPO office has become a real problem for us in the last couple of years with things like these cell tower reviews and the expansion contraction of work. And what it's resulted in is Mr. Hammer, my assistant director for Heritage Conservation, not only serving as my chief staff person for the Heritage Conservation side of the agency, but getting involved in the day-to-day management of staff issues and regulatory issues, which often end up being very controversial and quite contentious and requires negotiation, and not only drain his energy, but really sap the strength and the energy of the staff, who get very stressed out because they're dealing with a 30-day required turnaround by the federal law. They're dealing with a high volume and very demanding customer base. And so I brought in at times I thought that the wheels were going to come off that group. And so we brought in a management consultant to work with James and his staff, and one of the needs that she identified very early on is we need an intermediate-level manager to support James and provide that day-to-day support and direction for the staff on those issues. So had put together and have submitted to DAS a reallocation request to take a position that we had approved in 2001 in this committee and that had not been filled, and to reallocate that, and we submitted that position description and a financing plan for that to DAS and are awaiting for approval. As we began these presentations and talking to you about our budget request, we just really didn't know how to proceed, whether those could be considered as technical adjustments or something that we would come to the emergency board after session to deal with, just depending on the timing of their approval. And in talking to Susie, she gave us some very good advice that while some of the things that we had talked about as technical adjustments should be technical adjustments handled in work session, these are two things that I should bring to your attention and get officially on the record, potentially as placeholder amendments to our budget request to you, depending on DAS's approval and your response to them, that we may be asking you during work session to consider as a formal part of our budget request. And if we get a final answer from DAS before your work session, we'll provide you with all the necessary detail to support our request. If we fail to get that accomplished before work session, then what we will probably suggest is a budget note from you. Okay. Probably suggest a budget note in which you give us direction about how to proceed with those if we do, in fact, proceed. I want to explain in closing that the position that we asked for 2 years ago, the Ocean Shores permit position, we asked for because we had just come off the heels of very severe, couple of years of severe El Nino weather on the coast, which significantly increased our ocean shore permit activity to the point where our two ocean shore coordinators just couldn't handle it, and they needed a third person to back them up. So we put that in our budget. And we were going to finance that with the permit fees that are provided for in statute. Those two El Nino years were followed by a pretty severe La Nina effect, in which things really settled down, and we only issued a handful of permits in the last 2 years. So there was clearly no need to establish the position, given the volume of permits. And in fact, now looking at that issue, I would say that if that ever occurs again, where we have a big El Nino year and a lot of permit activity, we would simply ask for a temporary or limited duration position to handle that rather than bringing a permanent staff on. So that's the reason we didn't fill the position and would like to use that to satisfy the civil need. So again, Mr. Chair, I'm just simply asking that the record be expanded to include a heads up on those two, that I would regard them as something on the order of placeholder requests.
Did you have a handout or written response or request for that?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a handout. I have a summary of these that I provided to Susie earlier in the week, and I'd be happy to have copies of that to the committee.
By the time we get to work session, we can have something put together for the committee.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure that all the committee members had it in their files as well. Well, Mike, I appreciate that because I've served on this committee in the past, not this department, but I have seen requests come into the e-board right after we adjourn, and that's not appreciated, I guess, say the least. So I think you're on the right track and appreciate it. Lisa, did you like to respond to that, or I know you've got a handout here, too.
Mr. Chair, Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services. And in regards to the positions that were just described, we are looking at those and struggling along with everyone as to how to proceed with additional hirings, basically. So, but we will have an answer by work session. And you should have a document that looks somewhat like this, which is a response to the question that Representative Morgan asked yesterday about the workers' compensation charge increases. And just to summarize, during the 1990s, there was an effort with the Safe Corporation, which is the required insurer for the state of Oregon for workers' compensation, to reduce injury claims, and that was pretty successful and managed to reduce the claims. So those costs went down. And at the same time, the robust economy allowed for better interest earnings on funds. So those interest earnings were enough to cover whatever claims there were. Those reserve funds have been reduced. And so at this point, as well as there are some cost pressures, medical insurance costs have been going up across the board, and also there were some new requirements passed by the 2001 legislature that will affect the costs of returning people to work. And the insurance market apparently has changed since the September 11th tragedy. So those things, along with less favorable interest earnings, have combined to require an increase in workers' comp rates for most state agencies.
Okay. Questions? Representative Krieger? Thank you very much. I'm going to ask again if there's anyone in the audience who'd like to testify. And I guess we haven't seen anyone come in the door to sign up.
No, we have not.
So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing and adjourn our committee meeting.
Very efficient.